is we're talking about law. Who gets to be God? Who gets to be God's deputies? Who is the Most High? Who is the divine authority? It's all about the claim of the Most High. The only way that somebody can be higher than us is if we give away our power. Because there's nobody. We're all equal. But we're not equal in our knowledge. So ultimately, I think it does have to be a hierarchy, but it has to be a cooperative hierarchy, like a bee colony. It's about what our value system is, what we care about.
Hello, Universal Hive Mind. Today is April 21st, 2026. I'm your host, Nate Kapp, and welcome to the 82nd Cubbyhole Podcast, where critical topics are unveiled, discussed, and tested. The website for this show is cubbyhole.com. That's cubbywhole.com. And if you prefer to listen to the show on a different platform, you can also listen with Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon, TuneIn Radio, Pandora, Simplecast, YouTube, Odyssey, X, Minds, BitChute, and much more. Now, to all the newcomers, welcome to the Cubbyhole. I definitely recommend starting at podcast number one, work your way forward in order so you'll have a bigger picture understanding of this whole podcast, and you'll be a lot more prepared to deal with the more dense information like you're going to hear in this episode and the ones that follow this one, and also the ones that have come prior to this episode that are necessary prerequisites to understanding what you're hearing here. Okay. I'm not going to shoo anybody away. You know, I want people to feel free to listen to these shows out of order, but I'm just making the recommendation because it'll do you better. You won't be confused, and you'll have a way more cohesive development internally to see the bigger picture of what's really being laid out. Because I'm telling you, the picture is so massive here. And so it's only going to do you good. It's only going to do the whole world good if we listen to these shows in order. And so that being said, welcome back to all those veterans who have put the time in to studying these shows in order. I really appreciate all your efforts and your time. We have a very big episode follow-up to show number 81, and we are going to do a recap of show number 81, but this is going to be a very big episode, a very big intro. So I'm not going to really get into the material till a little bit later. There's a lot of things that need to be talked about before we get into that. But what is going to be talked about in this episode is we're going to do a further development of the concept known as the Logos and also the Lost Word. And I know that I keep on, you know, letting people know that we're going to get into the archetype known as Thoth, but I assure you, if you really listen to what I'm laying out, I really feel that this episode and the next episode are very necessary prior to the archetype or principle of Thoth. We're going to get into Isis as well in the next episode, but this episode, what we're really going to focus on are two modern conventional symbols in the tradition of Freemasonry. So that way we can really, you know, these are symbols that I, part of rituals that I did not cover in the beginning of opening up Freemasonry that I feel need to be talked about here. I think this is a great place to talk about this part of the ritual in the conventional modern Freemasonry, because it really does help us connect to the ancient world, to the ancient Egyptian mythos, especially in the solar cult, and really all the way back into the stellar cult. And it really, these symbols known as the hoodwink and the cable toe are very powerful symbols when understood properly. And, you know, I'm going to do my best to lay out the these symbols in the first, second, and third degree, just so we can, you know, get caught up on what they mean, and also so we can see how they connect to the ancient world. So this is all about the measurement system of care. That's what it's really all about. And so that being said, the measurement system of care is all about Isis and Thoth. And so it's a very big deal, and I'm really looking forward to getting into the content. But again, first, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Funnel 5 conference that just took place this past February 21st and 22nd of this year, 2026. Then I would like to pay a little tribute to someone who has recently passed, who I have a great reverence for his work. And then I will jump into the recap for the last episode, number 81, just to get us caught up and to, you know, sharpen a few things to, you know, make sure that we have a nice cohesion as we move into this episode. So the Funnel 5 conference, the Freedom Under Natural Law 5 conference, definitely turned out a lot better than I expected. Not that I didn't expect that it would be good, but I feel that all these conferences, all these funnel conferences have progressively gotten better, and this one just definitely exceeded my expectations. I thought that, you know, Leslie and Derek and Chris and Will all did such an amazing job. And, you know, one of the things that was very encouraging is noticing that the message of natural law, the science of natural law, was definitely embedded in everyone's work in some form or fashion. And I really feel that that is just a big win in the sense of, you know, how far we've come, and definitely some really cool development in the creative ways as well. A lot of people were doing music and poetry, animations, some really funny comedy. And, you know, I think that, you know, even though I'm very cautious about adding all these, you know, types of elements to the signal of truth, because they can potentially cause noise and you know, drown out the signal, I was actually really pleased to have all these elements added in, because what they do is they invite people. They're very attractive, and they're very inspiring, and they basically show people that are watching that they too can join in and, you know, give to this signal or add to this signal. And the presentation style that people typically do, it can become very rigid, and you know, people need a little break in between these presentations, and, you know, kind of having that element of being entertained by something that is also adding to the signal as far as, you know, the science and, you know, the overall message of natural law. I think that's very powerful. It gives the whole conference a type of rhythm that I think more people can be attracted to. So I think it's a really great thing. But what I really hope people understand is that we should always be striving for scholarship as individuals. We should always be striving for, you know, a pristine aesthetic in the way that we express in our great work. And what I mean by that is always be striving to sound our best, always be striving to look our best. And really, what matters more than anything is always be striving to put out our best effort in the work that we invest time into the work that truly has real value in this world when it comes to, you know, the unfoldment of natural law, not just the science of natural law, but the unfoldment of natural law. And, you know, just as long as truth is the target that we're aiming for. That is the information we should always be striving for and always be trying to put on the table and express. I mean, we should do, you know, whatever it takes to get our voice aligned to the signal. And that means if we got to add these elements and, you know, just create a nice balance in the way that we express in these conferences. I think that funnel, the way that they are, you know, putting these conferences together and what people are turning in as far as their work, I really do think that it is a really great balance. But, you know, just make sure that we're aiming for improvement and to not kid ourselves thinking that our individual development is ever going to evolve by singing or rapping or, you know, telling jokes or creating cartoons. We have to understand that what we should be really focused on is where we're lacking in the aggregate, which is scholarship. Scholarship is where we're lacking in this community, in the truth community, in the natural law community, in the freedom community. Scholarship is where we're lacking. We're far from any real scholarship collectively. And I'm not saying there isn't any scholarship. I'm just saying collectively, we are very far away from this very seriousness of the way that we do our work. So when I'm talking about scholarship, I'm talking about the seriousness in the studies, the seriousness in the research, the deep research, the research that is leading to that target of truth, work that is reliable, work that is credible, the work that has been extensively put through the trivium process. So when I'm talking about scholarship, I'm talking about the seriousness in the research, the seriousness in the way that we present what we know and what we understand. And so again, I am not, you know, trying to put any of the elements that were added, you know, to the conference down. Obviously, I'm praising them. I'm just trying to, you know, let people know we gotta not kid ourselves any longer in thinking that these types of things could ever bring us closer to the bigger picture, a deeper understanding of what's really going on in the world. And, you know, the finger is pointing right at me when I'm talking about all this information. I know where I need to do my work. I know where I need to, you know, strive to improve. I just know that I also need to call things out because I, you know, I care about this community. I care about truth. I care about this community. And I really appreciate this conference and, you know, all the conferences alike because they really are adding to the signal of the awakening out of this darkness and ignorance that we're all part of. And, you know, that's also part of what we're going to talk about today. So, you know, that being said, Brandon and I were also invited to this conference. This was my third time being invited back. But Brandon delivered a really incredible presentation called Amor Est Lex, Amor Sob Voluntate, which means love is the law, love under will. And if you didn't get a chance to watch this presentation, it's basically an esoteric initiation into Thelema. And it starts off a little bit basic, but not really. It's pretty advanced all the way through, and it just continues to get very advanced. And he gets into the Red Goddess, Babylon. He gets into Gematria and the symbolism that deals with Thelema. And it's a really, really important presentation. I really hope people see that this is a great way to, you know, show people what an initiation process into a mystery school looks like. And I feel that, you know, Brandon did a really great job at doing that. And also, I gave my presentation titled Oculus Part 2 with the subtitle The Sacred Cone. And this was a follow-up to my Oculus 1 presentation that I gave at the Funnel 3 conference. And this one deals with the circle dot and also the advanced sacred cone form that comes from the circle dot, as well as conjoining this symbol with what's known as the sacred spiral symbol. And basically, the whole presentation is a refinement of the cone symbol. It's an exhaustion of the cone symbol. And any of the initiates of the Cubbyhole will definitely see that there's a lot that I pulled from this podcast and basically distilled it into that presentation. And of course, there's a lot that I talked about in that presentation that's not in this Cubbyhole podcast, but I will eventually get more into it as I go. But there were a few things in that presentation that were some minor issues that I'd like to kind of, you know, refine or correct while we're going through this information. One is that I talked about the sacred spiral alignment or the unfoldment, and I said we don't just beam line to the truth, it's an unfoldment. And obviously, you know, the way that I approached that was very, you know, like a philosophical, symbolic approach to say beam line, because, you know, what you're trying to do is go from point A to point B, but it's an unfoldment. You don't just, you know, go from point A to point B in a straight line, in a beam line. You know, that's the symbolic way to say it, but it's not really correct. So I'm refining that and I'm correcting myself. It is actually beeline. So, and that's one word, beeline. So you beeline when you go from one point towards something, you know, in a straight line, okay? And like truth, because we don't just, you know, beeline to the truth, it's an unfoldment. And so I just wanted to, you know, refine that, correct that, however you want to say it. I know a lot of people probably don't mind it, but I just want to make sure that I'm correcting myself, because I want to make sure that I'm, you know, communicating these ideas as clearly as possible and not confusing anyone. So the other correction that I have is, or refinement, is that I talked about the physical trinity being a familial bond. And even though I think a lot of people probably don't mind, you know, me saying that, because I think everybody knew what I was talking about, the better way to explain the mother, father, child dynamic is to say the nuclear family or the conjugal family when you're talking about this bond or dynamic. So I just wanted to clear that up. I think it's important to use the proper words as much as possible, because it really does add to the clarity of the signal. And, you know, that being said, both my presentation and Brandon's presentation can be found on Cubbyhole under show number 82. And if you're not already at Cubbyhole, I definitely recommend going there, because that's where the slides are for today's show. They're very important slides that I'm going to go through later. But if you're not already at cubbyhole.com, go there, go to the top where it says episodes 51-100. Click on that, go all the way down to show number 82, and there you will find the links for Funnel 5 conference part 1 and part 2, or day 1 and day 2, And also, you will find both Brandon and my presentations that we gave at that conference. And also, at the end of day two, we were very fortunate to have Douglas Martin join us and drop some pretty powerful wisdom at the very end. It was really great. Everybody at the round table, we shared our thoughts and answered some questions, and it was a really, really great, powerful end to the whole conference. So I definitely recommend checking that out. And that being said, if any of the people who worked on this conference are listening, I have a great respect and a very deep appreciation for everything that you've done. And I'm very thankful that everybody that's been able to be part of these conferences and present or express, I'm very thankful that we've been given a platform to do that. And so I really hope that these conferences do continue, and I hope that they inspire more conferences alike. Now, just a real quick tribute that I'd like to pay to someone who I never really have talked about on the Cubbyhole, and that's because I was familiar with his work, but I never really invested too much time into it. But when I did learn about this person's passing, I really invested a lot more time into his work because our paths crossed. And actually, it was because of Will Keller. He posted on Facebook, and I saw it there, that William Donahue recently passed. A lot of people know him as Bill Donahue, but he was an American independent Bible teacher, but he was known for his symbolic, allegorical interpretation of the Bible. And so he was not someone who ever believed in the Bible to be a real, literal, historical text. He understood it. He was a hierophant. He was a master hierophant. And that means that he could interpret the Bible in the correct way to really, show people the real esoteric hidden meaning within the Bible that's encoded in the Bible, in the way that the Bible is really supposed to be read and studied. And I don't know that I've heard anybody as good as him. I've heard a lot of great interpreters of the Bible esoterically, but I would say he was definitely the best that I've ever heard so far. He really, put a lot of time into, he basically invested a lot of his life into interpreting the Bible and making a lot of shows. I think he made over 1,000 shows in his whole life interpreting the Bible and bringing people together, to show them that the Bible has a lot more to offer. It's very useful what he has done, because if you're really trying to understand the solar cult in its advanced form, in the more modern form, I would say William Donahue did a amazing job, explaining how this Bible should be interpreted, to really give people so much more value than what they actually find in there, because obviously we know anybody with their mind, with their head on their shoulders properly, knows that, when we take this Bible literal, or any holy text, if we take it literal, we will definitely see horrific things happen in the world, as what we're currently seeing happen. And so it's an honor to have been able to listen to as much as I have of William's work. And I don't agree with everything that he talks about, just as I don't agree with anybody completely. I think that what he did for humanity especially for the Christian world. I think it's a wonderful thing. I wish more people would listen to him, and I wish more people would be more like him. I think he had a really big heart, and he's actually pretty funny too. But it is very important to just understand, you know, that the type of work that he put out is very useful when trying to understand the solar cult. And he does get into some of the ancient stuff too. In some ways, he has explained a lot of this stuff even, you know, better than I have. So, but he's got a lot of energy, and he put out a lot of work. So I definitely recommend going to hiddenmeanings.com. You can find, again, his work, William Donahue, on YouTube. So I just, you know, I'm very thankful for his work. So I just figured I'd share that. Now, we're going to move into the recap for show number 81. We got into the Blue Lodge, or what's known as the Craft Lodge. And this is basically an umbrella term for the 3 degrees of Freemasonry, dealing with the Interred Apprentice, the Fellow Craft, and the Master Mason degree. And what I was trying to explain was, you know, how these degrees are very important when we're trying to understand the altar and the VSL. So the altar is the center point of the lodge, and that's in the literal sense and also the symbolic sense. And so obviously the more important thing to understand is that it's at the center of the self internally. Okay, so the center point is the heart. The center point is the mind. The center point is, you know, right at the center of the lodge of reality. And, you know, just always keep in mind that when we think of the actual lodge centers or lodge buildings, they do set up their, you know, jewelry or their furniture in a sense that, you know, gives the Mason some kind of reference of the, you know, the correspondence of the physical reality directed internally. So they can, you know, understand this type of information a lot better. It is inspiring to see it, you know, the way that it's all set up. However, I would say a lot of people, a lot of lodge Masons do not understand the internal world properly. But the point is just understand that this altar, which is basically the podium at the center of the room, don't take it literal. That's the worst thing you could do, is take it literal. But obviously, you know, there is a value to understanding it literal, in the sense of what it can be used for. If it's used properly, if it's used morally, it can be used in a very beautiful, symbolic way, expressed in the physical. And, but, you know, when I'm explaining it, obviously I'm really getting into the esoteric essence of this information, the symbolic and allegorical sense of this information. And so when we're talking about the altar, I want people to really think about the center of the universe, the center of the self, the center heart. The mind is at the center. And so the altar is this podium at the center of the room that holds a what's known as the VSL, the volume of the sacred law. And this is, you know, the book of nature that typically, symbolically, you know, in the symbolism, has the square and compasses on the open book. And this is where the initiate brings their sacred text, being, you know, like the Quran or, you know, the Bible, and, you know, bringing that sacred text. And it doesn't have to be this religious text. It doesn't have to be one of these types of religions. It can also be a mystery tradition where you're bringing any sacred text where you're bringing that sacred text to the center, to the altar, to true your work with the square and with the compasses, so that way you can extrapolate the light, you can extrapolate the truth, you can extrapolate the esoteric truth from that exoteric information. That's the whole point of the exoteric, because you're bringing the exoteric, you're bringing the knowledge to the esoteric, to the information, in order to unlock it and in order to distill the light. And so what you're trying to do is get back to pure forms. That's really what the altar truly is, you know, symbolically at its core, pun intended. And also, when we pay attention to the altar, we see that it has the three candlesticks, the three lights, and that's, you know, east, south, and west. There's no light in the north, so always remember that. But this is to keep us oriented in our light and in our direction in order to be present at the podium, to be in the here and now. That's really what it's, you know, ultimately trying to teach us. And so also, you know, speaking of candlesticks, I want people to remember that, you know, something that I talked about in the last episode, dealing with Amenta. We really can't understand Amenta in the north without first understanding Amenta in the west. Okay, so I just wanted to, you know, remind everyone about that. I really strongly believe that that is a very important thing to keep in mind when trying to understand Amenta and the solar cult. So, you know, the solar cult is dealing with more of the west, and the stellar is dealing more with the north. Okay, so I will explain this more as we go, but I just wanted to, you know, make that clear. Okay, so we also got into the beehive. This is a allegorical zoo type that we can understand the lost word, or the word, and Osiris, because it's about understanding that which is you know, fragmented, and then bringing that nectar back, all the bees from the flowers, from the fragmentation to the beehive, to make to integrate into building honey together. Okay, so it's about, you know, going from a fragmented holy light into a pure form, and that pure form being the beehive and the honey of the beehive. So then we got into the Tyler sword, and the Tyler sword is a very powerful symbol about protecting the temple from, you know, protecting the esoteric from the exoteric, from the outer world. And, you know, I got into the garden. So everyone has an internal garden. The garden is the mind. And so if we understand the outward exoteric garden, we can understand the corresponding esoteric internal garden. And the Tyler sword is all about protecting unwanted guests into the garden. Because, you know, think about the fact that in a garden, you plant in order, you sow, and then you reap what you sow, right? And so if someone else is going into your garden and planting into your garden without you knowing, or without your consent, this is really breaking in and entering. And that means that most people, their minds are being broken into. So there's people, sorcerers, dark occultists, these, you know, dark psychologists that understand this garden very well, and they go into everyone's garden, most people's garden, and they plant what they want, what they see fit, what they want to cultivate and grow in the mind, in the garden of most people, in order to accomplish their, you know, agendas that they have, you know, what they want to see happen in the world. And so we have to understand this Tyler as the protector, as our self-defense mechanism to, you know, not allow any unwanted, you know, guests, they're really not guests, but, you know, any unwanted energies to come into our mind. And that also applies to the negative thoughts. That applies to the chatter that's going on, just, you know, constant voice in the head. And so this is about, you know, finding a way to protect the mind from being overtaken by anything, whether it's yourself or someone else. So a very, very important symbol. And this is all about understanding the lost word, or the logos, because it's all about revealing who you are, revealing the light, so you can see in your garden, so you can clear the mist, the brain fog that we're all in, okay? You know, literally, but also spiritually, definitely, because that's where these, you know, dark occultists, these sorcerers, that's where they work. They work in the mist. They work in the darkness, the place that we can't see. That's why they are the dark occult. So then we got into classical antiquity. And classical antiquity is basically what preserves the meaning and the development of the logos over the last 2,600 years. Okay, so this is the you know, the later part of the solar cult, the, you know, quote unquote development of the solar cult. So then we talked about the word became flesh, and this is straight out of the Bible, talking about, you know, the unmanifest becoming manifest. And we got into the logos with Hinduism and Buddhism and Taoism, which is, you know, obviously these Eastern traditions, and there's more Eastern traditions that have the logos, the concept. And remember, the concept is what I was saying is so important when trying to understand the logos, which means word, speech, and reason, and also, you know, the structure of the cosmos. But the concept is about grasping something like the logos mentally and then bringing different ideas or different, you know, titles together into a single, you know, understanding, a unified understanding where there can be an understanding of the same science with different names and different forms, right? So, that being said, this concept is the same as the word or the lost word, which means the unmanifest to the manifest. It's all about consciousness has been lost to then becoming conscious of truth. Not the totality of truth, but just truth. We're only able to take in so much truth at a time. But as we take in more truth, it really expands our understanding of reality. So the word, in the sense of language and definition, is truly about gaining and understanding and clarity of the divine, of the creator and creation. And therefore, even though the creator is undefinable, we as humans try to define the creator in order to understand the creator. and have a relationship with the Creator and the creation. That's the unfoldment of the Word, or the unfoldment of understanding of the lost Word. So Albert Mackey actually talks about the Word, and he states that the Word is the very science of Masonic symbolism, because the Word is about the labor for truth. The lab, the L-A-B, lab for truth, because it's all about understanding the 24-inch gauge, which is the measurement of our sleep, of our work, and of our, you know, devotion to the truth. And so it is the 888, the 3 8s, which is, you know, 8 times 3 is 24. So it's all about how we divide our day up through discipline in order to really become conscious, to sharpen ourselves, to become conscious, to measure ourselves out through our labor for truth. And, you know, this is all about becoming a perfected Ashlar. And then we got into theology, which is the logical study of creation and the Creator. We got into green language, which is about becoming conscious of the Word by using this occult language, and caring what you say, what comes out of you when you speak, and then also what comes into you, what information comes into you. That's part of understanding green language. So it's a heart-based language. It's a heart-based frequency language. Right at the center. Okay, so that's why it goes with the altar. Green is right at the center. So we have to understand why green language is right at the altar of the lodge. And then we got into the sacred trace and all the methods of the sacred trace, emulation, synchronizing, ritual, mimicry. We got into left foot first, which is initiation and direction of evolution and consciousness. We got into the spire ritual, the spiritual cone, spire, conspire, holy trinity, sacred trace, fetishism, the crescent arch, Thoth being the measurement principle that we're going to continue developing, sign language, pure forms, mythology, eschatology, hero cults, cosmic parents, totemic sociology, animism, rejuvenation, mental material death, spiritual birth, spirit, soul, matter, square, compasses, X, zodiac, the inner journey of the soul, darkness, soil, underworld, Amenta. And remember, again, I just want to stress the Amenta thing, because I want to say it's really important to note that it's very difficult to understand Amenta in the north before first understanding Amenta in the west. And also that what really ties Amenta together is the lunar cult. So it all goes together, but we have to understand these things in order, in the way that they have unfolded in an advanced form first, before we can really go back to pure forms. And that's not to say we can't go back to pure forms directly, but we really can't understand the unfoldment or the refoldment before we understand the unfoldment. So very, very important. But we also got into Sothos, the Duat, the tomb, the womb, death, metamorphosis, natural law, religion, mystery traditions, mystery schools, the little bear, the great year cycle, the stellar, lunar, and solar mythos, Hiram Abiff, Jesus Christ, Osiris, Isis, Horus, Set, esoteric Freemasonry, anthropomorphism, preserving, and Aphanism. So again, why I go through and do the recap. I just, you know, I think this is probably going to be the last time I say this, but I'm caring enough to carry this information. That's why the word care is in the word carry, because I don't know if anyone listening has ever seen the meme of the female being carrying I think it was like two buckets of water, but I'm gonna butcher this, but it's something along the lines. The meme is about learning every drop of water is, you know, what makes you appreciate the weight that you carry. So, you know, when you see others who have a lot of information, a lot of knowledge, you can appreciate what they are carrying internally, because you yourself have carried, you've cared to carry that information, right? And so learning every drop of water is, you know, when it becomes really full, you really have a very deep appreciation to carry, you know, to know how important that water is, to carry it wherever you got to carry it to. And so that's why I carry all this, you know, recap information to make these shows cohesive and flow. Now, just as a reminder, I'm not going to do the ritual that I've been doing in these recent episodes, but maybe I will after I get through the development of the archetypal Thoth, but I'm definitely not going to do it while I go through this development of this archetype. But it's really important to note that this area of the research and the science of this, where we're at, you know, dealing with this mythology and eschatology, dealing with the ritual of Osiris, developing through this eschatology, especially post his dismemberment with Isis and Thoth, and also Set, this is all taken place in the solar mythos. Okay, so this is all the advancement of the solar mythos. And what we're trying to do is trace this information through the zodiacal tracing board at the bottom between Sagittarius and Capricorn, which is the winter solstice time period, and then moving forward from that. And so this science is preserved in the third degree of esoteric craft masonry. And that is, of course, if we're bringing the right knowledge to it. So we have to understand that how this tracing board really works, because it's not just dealing with, you know, the last 300 or 400 years. It's dealing with a science, a universal science that is, you know, it's timeless. But of course, it's not just timeless. It's about how we can trace this information that, you know, aligns to this third degree that goes all the way back to pre-totemic times. Okay, so that's really what it's used for. It's used to trace ourselves all the way back to when we had these very ancient ceremonies and these very ancient burial rites. It goes all the way back. And so that is why the zodiac, the zodiacal tracing board, is so important. And this is also why modern conventional Freemasonry is so important, because it bridges us back to the ancient preserved solar mythos science that, you know, really helps us go even further back into the lunar and further back into the stellar. So what my goal is in this episode is to trace out the more conventional ritual of modern esoteric Freemasonry, and basically reveal how this is this ritual is paralleled with the ancient Egyptian goddess Aset, or what we all know as the goddess Isis, and her the quest that she goes on to, you know, not only discover the 14 dismembered pieces of Osiris, but also how Horus becomes the archetypal second birth, the second advent. And this is basically the occult rebirth. And so this will be all about blindness, death, the occult, rebirth, the revealing of the lost word or light, and you know, obviously so much more. So in Freemasonry, the lost word really has to be understood as a symbolic idea, something that is internal, something that is esoteric, okay, and even personal. It's not something that we should ever, anybody should ever take literal. It's not a literal thing in the sense of, you know, keeping a secret, because a lot of people do believe that this lost word is a literal word that has to be kept secret in these lodge systems. And that's not to say that people don't have secrets and don't have, you know, some kind of, you know, secret lost word amongst themselves. But as a spiritual human being, when learning this ritual within Freemasonry and learning the symbolism and the allegory, the lost word is a symbolic idea. It's part of an allegory because this concept, it comes from the legend of Hiram Abiff, which is he is the master builder of Solomon's temple. And in the tradition, Hiram was he was murdered by the three ruffians before he could pass on the master's word. And so the master's word was lost. It became the lost word. And since then, in the story, what has to happen next is the actual Mason has to basically symbolically search for that lost word within himself. And so this is, you know, it's a very, very powerful way to get the initiate to understand something that has happened in the past, and now the journey has to start by, you know, seeking out this light or this lost light, this lost word, the truth. So it's a very beautiful ritual, a very beautiful way to remember thyself. So now we're going to go to the very first slide. If you're not already there, we're going to go to the slide that says the sacred trace dealing with the hoodwink. And we're trying to discover the lost word through the symbol known as the hoodwink, meaning blindfold. Okay. And I think it's really important to talk a little bit about the exoteric meaning of the hoodwink, just because I didn't talk about the hoodwink or the cable toe in the beginning stages of developing Freemasonry in the first degree. Okay, I didn't do that, but I think it's really important to at least make a mention here of the exoteric initiation process, just so people who are listening, who are, maybe you're not familiar with it, or maybe you forgot what the process is. It's a very valuable exoteric process that needs to be understood prior to the esoteric initiation that will really bridge everything else that I'm going to talk about dealing with Isis and Thoth and Horus and Osiris, okay, and even Set. And so it's a very, very important exoteric ritual that initiates go through. I'm not a Lodge Mason. I do not have any experience in the exoteric ritual that a lot of these, or that all Lodge Masons have to go through. So I don't have an oath. I've never had an oath. And I don't have the experience, but I do study what other Masons have brought forward. And I do, you know, contemplate on this information. I do a lot of research to really try to understand these rituals and these symbols. But what I wanted to share with you is what I found, as far as I know, the candidate or person who is about to become a Lodge Mason, they're basically prepared in a private room, and they are they're blindfolded, they're hoodwinked. And so, you know, just keep in mind that there's a double meaning to that, because, you know, hoodwinked also means to deceive, to, you know, to trick, or to, you know, manipulate. But it's so much deeper than that. And there is a positive aspect to it, and I'm going to get into that. But, you know, just keep that in mind in the sense of the ritual, because it's about understanding both ways. It's about understanding that as the initiate or the candidate being blindfolded, they are being tricked. They are being hoodwinked, but they are also being shown the way, okay? They're being guided, okay? So then the candidate is led into the lodge room by a guide who is typically a steward or deacon. Okay, these are names of the different Masons, the roles of the Masons that are part of these lodge systems. And while the candidate is blindfolded, he's guided through a series of symbolic actions and also questions and even obligations. And then eventually the blindfold is removed and the candidate is shown the lodge and shown all the members of that lodge for the first time in the sense of the ritual. Because it's all about understanding what the lodge itself represents inwardly, okay? So I'm going to read the slide now. In the entered apprentice degree, the hoodwink is obvious and physical, but symbolically, as a blindfold or veil, it expresses entering into darkness with no light. It signifies the natural condition in which the word or light is lost. Not because truth is absent. It's not just because the world you see is just, you know, magically gone because you put on the hoodwink, but because it has yet to be sought after and perceived. The conditions that largely conceal and keep the word lost are apathy, neglect, laziness, cowardice, and ignorance. So by wearing the hoodwink, the initiate acknowledges their profane state, not as one opposed to the sacred, but as one not yet awakened to it. So the lost word in this case is just, you know, remembering that the word is present. It's just not being recognized yet because of the inner blindness. And, you know, so this is why, if we look at, for instance, if you look at your room that you're in right now and you see all the details of the room, you see all the light reflecting off of everything in the room. Think of that as the word. Think of that as truth. Think of that as the Logos being revealed. Okay? And then think of putting a blindfold on, a very dark blindfold, that when you put it on, you are completely blind and you are also in total darkness. But then the question should be, just because I have a blindfold on, does that make all the light and all the things in the room just magically disappear? Does it mean that they're not there? No. And so that means that the room is not lost. The things, the light in the room is not lost. It's just you have a blindfold on. And that is the same as being blind in life to darkness, to the occult, to the spiritual laws of nature, to natural law, to the hermetic principles. And so it's about, a reflection. You know, the hoodwink is a reflection instrument. It's a divider. It's a way to find the center within darkness, at the heart of darkness, because the real light is found at the heart of darkness. You know, this is about understanding the underworld, that which you really can't see, but it's there. And this is all about understanding the garden, you know, the garden that I was talking about. It's a mental garden that you're entering into, that you're becoming conscious of, because we're all blind to our internal garden. We don't know what's growing in there. Truly. We're not conscious of what's really taking place within. At this point, okay, this is prior to, you know, going or starting the journey. So the hoodwink is a symbol of that closed state. And, you know, when we think of the hoodwink, the word, the conjoining words, you have the word hood and wink. So hood is what covers the head, you know, when you think of a hoodie. And it's not just what covers the head, it's connected to the head. You know, think of all the hoods on all, you know, think of the hood on Thoth. Think of the hood on, you know, the Egyptian pharaohs. But think of it in terms of something that covers the head. And then a wink is, you know, when you think of an eye wink. Eye wink means eye closed. So, you know, I've talked about the hood before, you know, especially with the cobra, the king cobra, who is the true hood. King cobra hood, the flare of the hood of the raised king cobra in defense mode, getting ready to attack. This hood is the true hood. And then there is a false hooded snake. And so you have to understand that the hoodwink is all about the true hood and the false hood. And, you know, the hood opens, it winks and opens. So it's about connecting to this zoo type. This hoodwink can, you know, connect to the zoo type to help us understand the trickery, you know, to understand the deception of the falsehood, or to understand the truth of the king. Because law is king. Natural law is king. The real hood, the truth. So it's really important to understand this hoodwink in terms of trickery, deception, and manipulation. Because that is how the word started, I believe, back in the late 1500s. This term was used to, you know, blindfold or pull a hood over someone's eyes in order to deceive them. And this is really important to understand in the sense of the mind or the ego playing games with the self, because it's about, you know, deceiving the self. It's about playing games and blinding the self on purpose. You know, this is about cognitive dissonance, because it's a veil between one idea and the other. And, you know, being a part in the mind and, you know, not understanding what the real truth is at the center. And so by wearing the hoodwink as an initiate, this symbolically is, this is what represents the willingness to accept that one is in a profane state. They have no regard for the sacred, no regard for the occult, and therefore there's no true care. At least not yet. Because truth can't be understood through the five senses alone. You can't just, when you have a blindfold on, literally, yeah, you can depend on your five senses, but that is very limited. You can't see the light with a blindfold on, but you can have your five senses that can, you know, sense out, you know, the whole room. But the point is, you can't see the light. And so that reflects into understanding darkness in the underworld with the occult. And therefore, this means to have the trust or the faith in the guidance of truth, that truth will guide you through the darkness, that light will guide you through the darkness, that truth exists and it will lead the way by listening to the voice of reason, which is the Logos. That's what the Logos is all about, because the universe is always speaking, and speaking is the Logos. The Logos is speech. And so that's why these rituals are so important. That's why knowledge is so important, because it's the light that we speak. And so then, this is what leads the blind initiate to look inwardly, to look into, you know, to have the inner sight. And so it forces the initiate to look deeply within the self. So this is about finding the center. It's about finding the heart. This is why the altar is literally and symbolically at the center of the lodge, because what the initiate is attempting to understand is what the internal temple is truly all about, what the self is truly all about. So this is about truth, which is the central principle of reality. And so if we go down to the second part, or just, you know, look at the top where it says the word is hidden. So in the first degree, the word is hidden. You haven't discovered the word yet. And that's because it's about being blind and being led, being pulled, being tugged. Okay? So, you know, there's, if we look at all of these pictures, it's the same initiate but different degrees. And so, obviously, the rope around the neck and arm and waist, this is the cable toe. So the cable toe is what we're going to get into here in a little bit. But the point is, pay attention to the fact that the initiate has the hoodwink on the whole time through all these degrees. And also pay attention to the fact that this is a veil. So a veil is such an important part of understanding the occult. Because the veil is what keeps us blind from seeing with clarity. I mean, that's what the mist is all about. The mist is the blindfold. The mist is the hoodwink. The mist is all about understanding our fog, our brain fog spiritually. The mist is what we have to have. We have to have faith in truth that it will lead us through the fog, through the mist, to the other side, to pass through the mist, to have plenty of light, to have plenty of truth, to make it through the mist, to not be stuck in the mist, because when we're stuck in the mist, that is where the sorcerers, the dark occultists, the dark psychologists, the dominators of this world, that is what they take advantage of every single second of the day, because they know most people are stuck in the mist and that they can't see through it. So that's what the veil is. That's why people are being hoodwinked every single day, because that is mind control. The dominators know that people are in a mist. They know they are in a fog. They know that they cannot see, and therefore they can trick them. They can manipulate them. They can deceive them. But people do it on their own. People deceive themselves because they don't care to know what is on the other side of that mist. They don't care to pass through the mist. They just would rather stay blind by the mist. And therefore, that mist represents ignorance. It represents darkness. It represents westing. Because westing is about understanding the sun, the light that goes down below the horizon that causes darkness. And so that is the hoodwink, because people don't understand what that even really represents. They don't even understand that the sorcerers of this world are using the sun to hoodwink everyone. They are masters at understanding how the cosmos works in order to manipulate those who remain in the mist. So now we're going to move on to the second part, the altar and VSL. So the altar, placed at the center of the lodge, which is what we've been talking about, represents the center of consciousness. The inner temple where the human and the divine meet, just like in the second degree. That's why this is associated with the second degree. I've talked about the veil between the initiate and, you know, the coming in contact with the Creator, to peek behind the veil, to be ready to, you know, pull that veil open to really see the divine, to have that little glimpse of the divine. That is about understanding the lost word, because the lost word remains behind that veil. Even though really it's everywhere all at once, it's present but it's about understanding the symbolism of pulling that curtain to see the light, to see the truth. So upon it rests the volume of sacred law. Upon the altar rests the sacred law, the VSL, which represents the revealed word being light or truth. Not the totality of truth, but its expression in a form accessible to the initiate. When the initiate is ready, then the truth appears. That's why this is about the spiral staircase, because the spiral staircase, as I've talked about many, many times, and this is dealing with the second degree, the spiral staircase is about understanding that the steps unfold. It's the unfoldment. It's the spiral unfoldment. We don't just beeline to the truth. It's an unfoldment. And so every step is a revealing, because you have to have faith that when you're going around that bend of the spiral staircase, you have to have faith that there will be more steps available. Because when you're going around that bend, you can't see around that bend. You have to have faith that more truth will be available, that another step will be revealed. And so it's about being ready for that next step. That's what this is about, being ready for that next step, having enough, having plenty of light, having plenty of understanding in order to make it towards that next step of light. So here the initiate is brought into the presence of truth, though not yet in full understanding as every step unfolds. So this altar and VSL arriving at the center, arriving at the five, arriving at the in the second degree between the two brass pillars at the footstep of the spiral staircase that leads us to the middle chamber. This is about finding your center. This is about finding your heart. So the second degree is associated with the heart, which is at the center, which is the axis. This is about balance. This is about finding equilibrium. And so this is what the hoodwink is helping us understand as we arrive to that center point of darkness. So we start to find the light, the true light at the center, at the heart of darkness. So the third degree is dealing with the removal of the hoodwink, which symbolizes the internal transition from darkness to light. Not merely seeing, but beginning to understand. Because you don't just see the occult, you learn to understand the occult. This is what I talk about with the oculus. The oculus is the eye that sees the occult, but you don't really see the occult. It's about understanding the occult. Because the occult is not meant to be seen, it's meant to be understood. So it marks the movement from hearing the word to tracing its meaning. The word remains, quote unquote, lost, not as something absent, but as something that must be realized inwardly. The veil is lifted, but the journey has only just begun. And, you know, in the truest sense, this is about you know, becoming aware of the word, becoming conscious, and having that real connection to nature, to creation, to the Creator, and understanding what your purpose is, what you're really here to do, and understand what you must do. Because a lot of people will go through these rituals, not just in Freemasonry, but other traditions, and they will think that they have made it out on the other side. And, you know, the hoodwink is supposed to represent that if you take off the hoodwink and think that this is the end and that you don't have to do any more work, then you yourself have been hoodwinked. Someone who thinks this way has been hoodwinked. They have deceived themselves. They have cut themselves off too early, too short. You know, and that's part of understanding the cable toe. Because it's about understanding that the removed hoodwink is about integration of the occult, of darkness, overcoming ignorance, overcoming base desires, understanding morality, aligning to that which is moral, aligning to natural law, and then really, truly doing the great work. And so this lost word is traced out through the mystery traditions, through the rigorous work of understanding the world that we live, to understand the religions of the world, to understand the syncretism, to understand the concepts, to understand the symbolism, to understand the difference between man's law and natural law, to understand the difference between light and dark. And that's another reason that, you know, a lot of these lodge members truly do not understand the difference between right and wrong. They don't understand natural law. Because if they did, then they would understand that the whole world is suffering. And therefore, that's the only true way to pass through those two brass pillars up that spiral staircase into the middle chamber. If you don't understand that the whole world is in a state of suffering, if you don't recognize the state of suffering, if you don't have the knowledge of natural law, it is impossible to truly go through those two brass pillars. Because it's about understanding the terrestrial and the celestial. It's about understanding law and the material world. It's about understanding the higher and the lower and being connected between the two and doing the great work between the two. And so, to take off the hoodwink too early, too soon, means that one does not understand these things. Because the hoodwink is about understanding, it's about integrating darkness into the self, meaning the light of darkness. Not the ignorance, because that's what we're here to overcome, is ignorance. We've already integrated enough of that prior to this ritual, to this tradition, to any of these mystery schools. The hoodwink is to really help us understand how to see in the dark. how to understand the center point. And that center point is truth. So it really, truly is all about anchoring to the center, the heart, the inner center, and staying true in our work. It's about unveiling and discussing and testing our work. That's what the altar is all about. The altar is our sharpening center for the knowledge that is brought to it, which means it's the sharpening center for having a clearer understanding of the sacred. This is why there is a square and compasses overlapping the volume of the sacred law. The square is used to morally test and measure and trace out the knowledge that is brought forth, that is brought to the information in order to true one's work. And then the compasses is about keeping the emotions in check as you go through the work, as you are questioned, as you are challenged. And so this is about keeping the heart balanced and upright, to not let passions or desires get out of control through that knowledge. So it's about governing thoughts, emotions, and then bringing them into alignment to create a balanced moral action into manifestation. Now, another thing that I wanted to mention about this hoodwink is that if we look at it like the moon, the dark side of the moon, in the sense that there's a side of the moon that we never see, which is the back side of the moon, and then there is the light side of the moon that we can all see with our five senses, with our own two eyes, we can see the front face of the moon. And so the hoodwink basically acts like the dark side that isn't just blank or nothingness, right? It's about learning the unseen forces that are not seen, like natural law, like the occult, like the hermetic principles. And so the moon symbolically is helping us understand through this hoodwink that there is a spiritual side that is unseen, and then there is the face of the moon, which is seen. This is the literal light, and then the backside of the moon is the light of darkness. And this is really what I've been trying to say. This goes hand in hand with what I've been saying about the stellar light of the moon is what we have forgotten to, or what we have neglected to keep a hold of in our ways of understanding our reality. Because most people, and this is one of the biggest problems in the world, is most people are stuck on the physical, the literal light of the moon. Because they know, everybody knows that the literal light of the moon is the sunlight. But what most people have forgotten or neglected over time is that the spiritual light is the stellar light. It is the light of the Most High. And so that is about understanding the other side of the moon. We know it's there, but we never have seen it with our own eyes. And so we only see one side, but really the other side, the dark side, that is the light, the stellar light, the Most High, the central light of reality is symbolic of the other side of the moon. And that's what this hoodwink also can teach us. Also, I would like to say that, if we just look at these three images One thing that I do want to make mention is it's not really clear whether these three images are the first, second, and third degree. Definitely the initiate on the right would be the third degree, and the first degree would be the initiate on the left. But the third degree on the bottom with the altar, that's correct. But I think it's just not clear about the second degree. But I'm still using it this way because it does make a lot of sense. And I'm going to get into this as I move into the next slide. But one thing that I really want to, you know, just stress is that I would say entering into the first degree is about being hoodwinked by darkness and ignorance, right? And then the second degree is about learning how to navigate the darkness, the lodge or the occult with the hoodwink. And, you know, being led and also learning how to understand. And the third degree is the critical moment of choice, where the hoodwink is to come off like the opening of the casket. That's one of the ways that we can, you know, learn how to understand this, is that if the hoodwink comes off in the third degree, it's like the opening of the casket. But does the initiate honestly have enough? Do they have plenty in order to pass, to have what it truly takes to raise back into the physical world with enough spiritual maturity? Do they have enough of an understanding of natural law? Do they have enough understanding of their purpose and what they're really here to do? And I would say, from my perspective, most lodge masons, they take off their hoodwink way too soon spiritually because of the degrees that they receive as, you know, their rank in their lodge system, where someone who is spiritually still very asleep to reality, they're receiving high degrees from their local lodge group. And this clearly means that they have, they've been hoodwinked as a result, because they don't truly have plenty in order to pass. And these so-called, you know, master masons or Shriner masons, they are referred to in different circles as porch masons, because they receive degrees as a type of status, but don't really do the true great work, the true internal shadow work. Sadly, most masons, most lodge masons that I've listened to, do not show any signs of understanding natural law. They do not show any signs of coming out of the lodge to teach natural law. So they're withholding all this information within these lodge systems. And, you know, they're not really coming out to, you know, help educate the world. Now, some are. I don't want to say they're all like that. But I do not hear the seriousness in the Masons that I've heard about natural law. It is such a rarity. It is, you know, I just can't believe that people can have this type of knowledge and they think it's all for themselves or only for their little group. That means you've been hoodwinked. That means you've been hoodwinked, because this information is not just for you. If you see that the world is going through a state of suffering and you keep the information, you keep the knowledge within the lodge system or within whatever lodge system, it doesn't have to be just Freemasonry, it can be any lodge system. if you're withholding that knowledge from the people, then you've been hoodwinked. So just think about that, okay? Now, we're going to go to the next slide. And this is a very, very powerful symbol. But the cable toe is something that really ties this all together. Okay, pun intended. It is a rope. It's a chain. It's a cord. It can be either one of these things, but we have to understand it as a symbolism, as a symbol. And so this is all part of understanding Isis and Thoth. And it's also part of understanding this Master Mason degree, okay? So what we're going to do is trace the lost word through the cable toe. So again, we have the 3 degrees. We have the same initiate, but different degrees, just to show what the initiate symbolically looks like with the cable toe, with the, the clothes are a bit of a mess. But pay attention to that, because that's very important to the whole ritual, to the whole allegory, okay? And in the profane state, the cable toe symbolizes bondage to ignorance and also bondage to base desires and also external forces prior to coming under the care and guidance toward the recovery of the lost word. So in the first degree, getting ready for the first degree, we see the initiate with the hoodwink and the cable toe around the neck and the skin of the left arm showing, and also the pant leg of the left leg is rolled up above the knee. And, you know, just remember what I talked about, left foot first. This is very important, because remember that a naked part of the body is about, you know, being naked to the Creator, okay, symbolically, right? So the left foot is about, you know, starting. It's about initiation. But the rope around the neck, this is very, very symbolic, okay? This is not meant to be taken as a literal thing. It's about understanding the symbolism. It's about understanding why these symbols are the way they are. It's about understanding why these rituals are the way they are. And so a rope around the neck means to tug. It means to tow, you know, like towing a car, right? So you're being towed, you're being tugged, you're being pulled by something that is leading you, by, you know, in this case, a deacon, or, you know, you could say this is the worshipful master of the lodge, the symbol of the lodge. It's pulling you to the truth. And so this is why, you know, most people, when they, you know, symbolically have this cable toe around their neck, it's loose. It's loose. It's not tight. It's loose. And there's a reason for that. It's because it is not pulling you completely against your will. It's just tugging at you. Hey, truth exists, but and maybe you need a little bit of a push. You need a little bit of a pull. You need a little bit of a tug to go in the right direction. Because most people, are going in the opposite direction. They are strangling themselves in ignorance and bondage. So most people are in bondage to their own darkness, to their own ignorance, to their own base desires. And therefore, that's what that cable toe really represents in the first degree. And remember, it's about understanding that this cable toe has always been there. It's always been there. It's always been around the neck ever since we have began our lives, because we don't escape truth. We don't escape reality. As long as we're alive, we don't escape reality. And I would say even when we're, you know, physically, you know, done for, when we're physically dead, we don't escape reality. We are bound to this reality regardless of what we believe. And therefore, the cable toe is symbolic of our belief in authority, because we don't know what to make of this reality. So we typically, you know, like a child, have a belief in authority because we ourselves have not done the work to understand reality yet. We have not, you know, become enlightened yet. We're still very deep in our darkness and our ignorance and our apathy. And it also represents silence because, you know, obviously if you have something around your neck, that represents having silence in order to learn. Because as an initiate, we're here to learn. We have to silence ourselves in order to learn what we don't know or understand yet. So that means being in darkness is about, it's a, you know, darkness is a receptive force. So we, it's about being in silence to learn. You know, a lot of people who start out this way are agnostic. They don't know. They don't know the information yet. And they know that they don't know. They know that they're ignorant. So it also means being disoriented, because it's about not knowing what direction to go. That's why you're being pulled. You're being pulled in a direction. So you're allowing yourself to be pulled in a direction because, you know, you want to be led to in the right direction. And you could be led in the wrong direction. Most people are led in the wrong direction because most people don't understand the difference between light and dark or right and wrong. So people are disoriented. They don't know their directions. They don't know the difference between light and dark. And therefore, they are in a state of disorientation or disarray. So being, you know, all the clothes being a mess is a form of disarray. It means to not know really what you're part of and to be kind of a mess. And, you know, maybe you have, you know, maybe you have a little bit of skin showing because you do believe in a higher power, but you're just, you know, still very confused. And that's why you have clothes on the other side, because it's about, you know, initiating yourself towards something that you, you know, trust or believe, but, you know, also kind of, you know, having your clothes on as a form on one side as a form of still hiding from the truth, still not in all the way, still controlled by base desires, still controlled by material. And so this is about restraint, which means that this rope around the neck is tugging us forward. It's tugging the initiate forward toward very uncomfortable things, very dangerous aspects that you could say are going on in the underworld, in the mist. And so this is about having control over one's emotions, you know, to not get, you know, to not let their anger or emotions get the best of them while they're on their path to clarity and to understanding. But then, of course, I've been talking about guidance and trust, but also dependence. So dependence is about, you know, depending on someone to, or something to pull you through, to pull you through the mist, to tug you through the mist, to tug you in the right direction. To depend on someone or something is to lean on them for guidance, for trust, for, you know, getting you through certain tough situations, whether that be, you know, internally or externally. It's about understanding that we all have a certain dependence on parts of reality to get us through. And then the second degree, this is about when we look at the right arm. The right arm is what is tied by the cable toe. So the loop is around the right arm. And this is about obligation to morality. This is about obligation to moral action, because, or obligation to truth, obligation to learn. So this is about working with the rope. And because the rope is that which could, you know, be, you know, your restraint. If you're trying to run the opposite direction, it's not going to let you go anywhere, because you're bound to the laws of creation. You cannot escape natural law. And so you can either try to break the laws of nature and go in the opposite direction, or you can start to turn and align to natural law through the cable toe, because it's about understanding that the cable toe is connected to you, from you to the center of reality, to the center of the lodge. You are connected to that, and you can either align yourself to it and learn the center, or you can try really hard to escape law by avoiding truth, by you know, lying to yourself. And people do this all the time. It's nothing new. But working with the rope is about alignment to natural law. It's about alignment to truth. And the right arm is about having your actions checked morally. And so this is about learning natural law. It's about alignment to moral law. And therefore, this is about, if you look at the initiate, the initiate is basically mirroring the first phase of the initiate. So now the right leg is naked up to the knee, and then the right arm and chest is naked. Okay, so this is about turning. This is about going into the underworld. You're beginning to enter into the underworld. You are entering into the underworld. You're starting to learn the underworld. You're starting to learn darkness. So you're turning. So it's about turning from, you know, the light that you think you know into the light of darkness, and becoming enlightened in the dark. It's turning your darkness into light. And, you know, this goes hand in hand with understanding the square and compasses positions where the square is overlapping the compasses in the first. The compasses are one leg is out, one arm is in the second, and then the third degree, the compasses is completely overlapping the square. So this kind of mirrors that as well. And so in the underworld, it's about understanding. So the second degree is about coming to an understanding of the reality that you're living in. And that means you're starting to find balance and harmony. And that's because you're doing the shadow work. This is where the shadow work is to be done. In the dark, facing your traumas, facing the truth, facing the things that are restraining you, facing the deception and the wrongdoings of your life by correcting them with the right arm, with right action. That is the obligation. And so this is what helps us start to understand responsibility, to understand that as we become more conscious, we start to realize our true responsibility. As we take a new step of the spiral staircase, we're learning our responsibility in this reality. And so that means there's commitment. So this is about the pledge. Really, the pledge begins at the beginning, but it's about becoming aware of the pledge and also committing. It's about commitment. And so the pledge is about the commitment, the obligation to go all the way through. Because there are two mistakes that one can make on the path to truth or to enlightenment. One is not starting. The other is not going all the way, to not be fully committed. And so this initiate is in a partial disarray. And, you know, this is still, you know, part of understanding Chapel Perilous. To, you know, start to understand that there is something bigger than the self. To start to really see that, to start to really understand that, to start to realize that you can't just keep running away, because that's what the first part is about. Because we do, we tend to just want to go back to sleep. When we wake up a little bit, we want to go back to sleep, or we want to run away. You know, this is the quote by Carl Jung. People will do anything, no matter how absurd, to avoid facing their own soul. Well, that is part of understanding the first part with the cable toe around the neck. And that's partially part of the second degree as well, because it's about understanding that, you know, people still are not completely sure, because, you know, ego is still partially dominant. The ego is still very, very much on the throne of the self. It still rules the self. And therefore, it's about understanding that, you know, this is the turning point, the true turning point of the self. This is where the spirit is starting to raise above the ego, above the material dominance. And working with the rope is getting to know the rope. It's about alignment to truth. And then the third degree with the initiate has the cable toe around the waist. And we see the chest is fully exposed and the legs, the knees are fully exposed. And that means that the initiate, when the knees are fully exposed, that means submission to the law, to the creator,
to the Most High.
That's what that means symbolically, because it's about having the naked knees to the ground, to be grounded. But then the chest is the heart. So it's about being open with the heart to receive the light, to receive the signal. And that means connection. So this is about becoming the rope, understanding that you and the rope were never separate, that you have always been the rope, that you've always been the that your life has always been an unfoldment. That's what it is. The rope is the unfoldment. That's why the saying in Freemasonry is the length of my cable toe. This is one of the most famous phrases in Freemasonry, is when it comes to the cable toe, is the length of my cable toe. And that means the cable toe is symbolically the measure of your obligation to truth, how far you are bound and able to act. So if you look at the circle with the dot in the center, a very, very important symbol overlaid with the sacred spiral symbol, something I talk about in my work all the time, that I haven't really talked about too much in the cubbyhole, but now I'm going to start to really unravel this symbol. The spiral itself is the unfolding journey of the cable toe. So the circle you can look at as going around the neck, and that is the boundary conditions of natural law. That means that no one escapes the law. No one escapes God's law. So that's why, you know, the circle is infinite. It represents the law of creation. But so does the point. The point is the alignment. The circle is symbolic of infinite choice. So the infinite choice, that's free will. You're free to choose whatever you want to do. But that does not mean you escape consequences. So that means that the cable toe is about your alignment to truth, your alignment to natural law, the point. So we start out in the circle. The circle is our free will choice. And really, the only reason for free will is to align to natural law, to align to truth. So how far will you go? How far is your, what is the length of your cable toe to get to the truth, to unfold natural law? How far will you go? How central will you become? But it's not just that. We have to understand that if we look at the spiral as the cable toe, as the cord, as the rope, this is the unfoldment of the journey from the circle to the point first. I mean, really, the way that it starts is we start out with a point, and then, life is the circle. The life of choice. And then we are supposed to align ourselves morally to that point, to that center point, to know the difference between light and dark, between right and wrong. And so, how far are you bound? How far out are you in ignorance, and how far in are you enlightened? But then the real great work, that is the great work, but the even the more important great work is how far will you go from when you get to the point to have a radius of how you help, how you get the information out to others. How far of the rope will you allow yourself to go all the way down that mountain to the base of the mountain to help others out of their ignorance, out of their darkness, out of their apathy, out of their laziness, out of their cowardice? How far will you go? So it's a measurement system. And some people, you know, everybody goes a certain amount. Everybody goes a certain amount. No one has the same length. Everybody has a certain amount, but it's about understanding this is a measurement system of how much you care. How much do you truly care? And so that's about becoming the rope and understanding that you really are the rope in the way that you act in the world. So this is about wisdom, because wisdom is the rhetoric, how we say what we say, how we say what we understand, how we say what we know and understand, because wisdom is in action. How much do we care to spread wisdom out in the radius, in the circle? Because it's about casting out. It's about outcasting to those who are ready and hungry to learn. And so this is about being in equilibrium. It's about transformation. That's what the Sacred Trace is all about. It's about transformation. Putting yourself through the methods, through the rituals, through the symbols, through the allegories, to transform yourself into, from a dark, ignorant, apathetic being into an enlightened, balanced being of light. So it's about commitment. It's about coming back from the underworld up into the, you know, rebirth. This is about the occult rebirth of the self, the second birth, the spiritual birth. That's the transformation. That's about having enough to pass through the darkness, through the heart of darkness, to become raised with enough light, enough spiritual maturity to cast out the knowledge of natural law and the unfoldment of natural law. And you know, how far is your cable toe as far as, you know, how far you will go back into antiquity, anthropology? How far will you go back to origins? How much do you care about that? So it's not just about your, you know, spiritual symbolic rebirth. It's about understanding the world that we really live in, because we understand origins, to understand what's happening in the here and now, because we understand what has taken place in the past. So how far are you willing to go to develop, to unravel your cable toe, to really see and understand what's going on in the present day? So this is an internal bond to truth. And if you clip the cable toe too soon, if you cut it off too soon, then, you know, this is corresponding to a baby who has been born, who is connected with an umbilical cord. See, because there's the physical first birth, and then there is the spiritual second birth. So the spiritual second birth is about the cable toe that you're bound to. You're bound to the Great Mother Lodge, the Great Mother. And if you're going to raise up as a human being where you no longer need the nutrients of the underworld, of the sacred feminine, because you have enough, because you have plenty, then that cable toe can be clipped. Just like a baby, if the baby is born and the baby has enough nutrients from the mother, then, you know, really what you should do is just wait till that baby has, wait till the umbilical cord has fallen away on its own, where it disconnects on its own. That's the real, true way in nature that you're supposed to do that. And so you can even look at the cable toe in that sense, because if you have enough, you don't need to, you know, just go in there and symbolically cut it with scissors. But you have to understand it that way, because if a true physical baby is cut off too soon and doesn't get enough nutrients, they're not going to develop properly. It's going to be a lot harder for them to develop properly in life. And that's why they do it. It's a very dark ritual that they do, where they have the father come in and clip the umbilical cord and cut off the baby from their nutrients that they're supposed to get all the way out. That's why you're supposed to leave it on the whole time, all the way until it naturally falls off, because the baby has plenty of nutrients, just like the initiate, just like you. If you have plenty from going, you know, through the underworld, then your cable toe will just fall off naturally. But to symbolically cut it off too soon means you have basically pitched your tent going up the mountain of enlightenment, you know, the whole allegory that, you know, we've talked about quite a few times on the show. It's about pitching your tent too early and staying there and, you know, enjoying the view on one side of the mountain and not going all the way up. And then, of course, once you get up, you go all the way back down to help others. But most people don't even start the journey. But, you know, making the mistake to pitch your tent too soon, that's like cutting the cord, cutting the cable toe, cutting yourself off. So this is all about understanding Ma'at, because your cable toe is about, you know, obviously I've said this already. Being, you know, starting on the journey, we don't just beeline to the truth. It's an unfoldment. But our perception of reality is part of understanding this cable toe, because we have the ability to align ourselves to that which is straight, which is that which is correct, which is that which is right. And that which is right is about being moral. It's about being true. It's about being correct. So that which is straight is the way that our perception, the way that our action aligns with truth. So the goal is to not be all over the place, to not be in disarray. It's about being in alignment to that which is straight. So it's about being a true builder. Because remember, Ma'at means that which is straight from the level. So it's about being level and plumb, and therefore having that right angle the 90-degree angle, which is being right. It's about building right, building true, building correct, building just like the physical world of building buildings. You have to build things correctly. Well, it's the same thing as building a world morally. You have to build correct. You have to build proper. You have to build things the right way. If it's crooked, then you're a crook. You're a crook. You're crooked. If you're building, you know, with poor lines, if you're building with a crappy, shabby foundation, you're going to build crooked, and therefore you're a crook. And so, because, you know, crook is associated with being immoral. It's about being ignorant. And so that's what this, you know, ashlar is all about. It's about truing your ashlar to make it polished, to perfect it all your life. So tracing the lost word is about, as you get closer to that point, that center point, you truly are revealing the lost word. You truly are revealing that which has been lost, that which is holy. It's here and now. It's never absent. It's always present. But it's about understanding that we have to work for it. You have to earn it. Freedom is not free. Freedom is earned. And also, this is part of understanding the fertility ritual. Because, and as I'm going to get into Isis, this is all about understanding that as we plant, so we reap. And it's the same thing in the sense of, you know, as we, you know, go down into darkness and face our darkness, this is where the spirit can rise. This is where the spirit can rise above the dominant material self to be rebirthed. That's why it's a spiritual rebirth or a spiritual birth. However you want to word that, it's the same thing. It's a fertility ritual. And so just, you know, and so basically the hoodwink is what removes sight. And the cable toe is what provides direction. That's why they go together. So as we are led as blind people with truth, truth is what leads us. If we have faith in truth, it will lead us through the dark. But eventually we gain enough light that we do this on our own. We don't need to be tugged anymore. Now we are actually pulling the line. We're pulling ourselves. We're guiding ourselves. We're pushing ourselves to go to that centrally defined principle of reality being truth. Now we're going to go to the final slide. We're going to continue talking about the cable toe. And we're going to start with the quote right underneath the cable toe by Albert Mackey. This is a definition by Albert Mackey. He states, "That which tuggeth, or with which we tug or draw." So that means what I've been talking about. The cable toe is there to tug us, to tow us towards the truth. It is about restraint, in the sense that we can fight it, we can fight going towards truth, or we can start to go in the direction where we tug ourselves and draw ourselves out of ignorance. Because, you know, this is about being an autodidact. So I consider myself an autodidact, and that means I'm self-taught. I've learned on my own. I was not, you know, trained. I was not, you know, I didn't have someone go out of their way to really teach me for the most part. I have had people in my life who have cared enough to teach me, but for the most part, I'm an autodidact. I learn the knowledge. I learn the truth on my own. I do the work on my own. And really, I wish more people would be autodidacts for truth, because it really does develop you into something, you know, more. It allows you to become your best version because you're trying to learn reality. You're trying to figure this out on your own through free will. It's not being forced upon you. It's not like what schools do where they tell you what to think, or they force views into your mind, like the news, on what to think. It's being an autodidact is because you want to know, you want to understand. You're pushing yourself into the knowledge, into the right knowledge, in order to develop yourself with an understanding. And so there's the little quote right there underneath the circle and the spiral that says, "That which binds also guides." So again, the cable toe is what binds us to the truth if we're ready to receive the truth, if we're ready to start the journey. But we're also bound by the boundary conditions of natural law, which means that we don't escape natural law, but we can, you know, align to, we can, you know, stay in the circle of making the choice to do the wrong thing all the time, or we can choose willfully, consciously to align to the truth, which is the center. And so that center point being connected to the cable toe is what leads us on our journey. It is the development symbol. It is what we use to develop ourselves. And, you know, there's so much that I have not, you know, covered on this symbol, or both of these symbols that I've been talking about. But what I want to get to now is what Albert Churchward has to say about the cable toe, because he's basically asking the fraternity, the brotherhood, if they really know the origin and the true meaning of this cable toe, because it's a lot deeper than what people think. So originally, it was a chain. And by the way, this quote is from Signs and Symbols of Primordial Man. And this is a must-have for anyone who considers themselves a true initiate into these, you know, rituals, into this tradition. So originally, it was a chain. The cable toe was a chain or rope of some kind worn by the eye, the initiate, or those about to be initiated, to signify their belief in God and their dependence on Him and their solemn obligations to submit and devote themselves to His will and service, which is, you know, to Ma'at, and the fact that He is neither naked nor clothed is an emblem that He is untutored. So, you know, just like I showed you with the initiate and all the phases with the different, you know, the clothes being, you know, kind of messy on one side or disheveled, this is about being untutored. This is about, you know, being, you know, halfway in or halfway out. So it means that the initiate is naked in front of the Creator. The initiate is vulnerable to the Creator, to truth. And that also is about submission. You know, being on the knees is about submission, as we see with the initiate in the modern image of Freemasonry in the lodge at the altar. It's about being on the naked knees. And so this is where Churchward says that someone who is untutored is a mere child of nature, unregenerate and destitute, being poor, of any knowledge of the true God, as well as being destitute of the comforts of life. This is the state in which we find all candidates. The chain was used by the Druids and the Egyptians as a symbolism, as stated above. Also, that he was being led from darkness into light, from ignorance to knowledge of the one true and living God, creator and judge of all things in heaven and earth. Here we have the origin of the cable toe in the eschatology, and that's what we see on the left with the god Amsu. And so I'm going to read what it says under that, under the name, under the picture. The rising spirit of mummied Horus in the mythos and of Osiris in the eschatology. So it's important to understand this is Horus in the mythos, and this is also Osiris in the eschatology. So remember, the mythology becomes the eschatology, which means it comes before the eschatology. And therefore, we have to understand that this is Amsu, Horus, the risen man god. We see that he holds the whip of power, which is the flail, the Egyptian coup, in one hand, pointing above. The other hand is not free yet from the swathing bandages and is pointing downwards. And it says the good shepherd. So the coup, the flail, is the part of the person that becomes fully awakened after death, especially to their sovereignty. And so the whip or coup being raised up by the free arm is about spirit being raised from the darkness and the abundance of, you know, having plenty to go through the darkness to be able to be raised. And therefore, that also represents kingship, the divine right to rule the self. But the other arm that's being restrained downward in the earthly mummy, this corresponds to the two feathers on the crown or the top of the head of the of Amsu, the anthropomorphized deity. The two feathers represent the two lives of the self, being the earthly life and the spiritual life, the terrestrial and the celestial. And attached to that crown with the two feathers, the cable is on the cable toe is on the back of the head going all the way down in a straight line. And again, remember, the straight line is about understanding Ma'at, but that is the cable toe. It's about the alignment to be raised, the alignment to Ma'at to be raised. That's what that is. That's what that represents. So he was, you know, Osiris was essentially guided through the underworld by Anubis, which is, you know, this is about passing through the darkness, the dangers of the darkness, the trials of the Duat, which then, you know, after Osiris goes through the process of death, then he egresses as the risen Amsu, which is referred to as the first risen man god, which is about discovering the lost word or revealing the logos. It's about equilibrium, being in a state of equilibrium. And again, one thing that I, you know, just I really want to stress is that, you know, Churchward is making sure to differentiate between, you know, AMSU risen being part of the stellar ritual originally, Horus, and the Osirian ritual where Osiris is being dragged or tugged in a boat, which is about being the same powers or the same forces being dragged through the darkness of the underworld into light. And those powers he's talking about are what we find in the ritual. And that being said, something else I understand about this cable toe very deeply is it's vital to see this symbol not only as the length that you will go for truth, and that means in every way possible, but also the length that you will lay for progeny, for, you know, the future generations. And, you know, like I talked about earlier with the circle dot, well, if you raise that into a three-dimensional form of the cone, just think of that as the mountain. And if you reach that, you know, apex center point at the top, the real great work is about spreading that information out down to others for, you know, progeny. And it's a bridge symbol. This cable toe is a bridge symbol. It's a lunar symbol in that sense because it represents the underworld and also the boat or the arch or the crescent. And, you know, Churchward is clearly stating that if the cable toe is understood at length in the ancient world, he's saying it's trying to reach us. It's trying to ask us in the here and now, in the present day, how far will you go for truth? How far will you tug yourself out of ignorance and darkness? How far is your radius? How driven are you to really know the truth? And is it aligned to natural law to begin with? But will you develop and unfold the science of natural law? And how far will you unfold that science? How much do you really care? I mean, think of the box most people are in when it comes to anthropology. You know, most people are in a very corrupt solar cult, 6,000-year box. And this science, this eschatology of AMSU is so much older than that. It is an earlier solar cult eschatology that preserves a very ancient, at least 300,000-year-old stellar mythos, the science that is stored in that mythos. But what it's really getting at the core, is how much do I really care to understand this connection and truly have the connection of freedom from the restraint of my cable toe? And I would say that most of the Lodge Masons of today, especially, and just seekers in general, are they're symbolically cutting their cable toe very short and way too early, like I talked about with the baby's umbilical cord. And therefore, they're not really developing themselves any further. A lot of people are too stuck in not only the 6,000-year box, but they're stuck in just the last 200 or 300 years. So you really have to broaden your radius of your cable toe to really extend or expand your care. So we got to be careful to not cut our cable toe too early, or else we're going to be hoodwinked as a result. And one thing I wanted to say also is, if we look on the right, we'll see this same image of Amsu on the bottom right. This is ancient esoteric craft Egyptian masonry. That's what this is. And we see Amsu with Isis behind him with a scepter. And we also see the initiate, the guide, in front of him. And so if we see this science is essentially saying the same thing, this image is saying the same thing, it's the same concept as what we see in modern Freemasonry in this image with the conductor, the deacon, in the back with the staff. I believe that's a deacon. But he is the one who conducts. He's the one who directs. But the worshipful master, who is the initiate that we see in front of the candidate, in front of the initiate who is on his knees with the hands over the VSL at the altar, this is the worshipful master, which represents the lodge itself. And therefore, this is what the initiate is connected to symbolically with their cable toe. And so they're saying the same thing. It's about being directed. It's about being tugged. It's about drawing out from ignorance. To, you know, tug yourself out of ignorance, to tug yourself out of darkness. And these, what we see in these images is essentially learning about what these beings represent, what they're associated with in the self is what matters most, not the, you know, some actual people. We have to get out of the literalness and understand that these. You know, we live in a very anthropomorphized, humanized world where, you know, deities or aspects of the self are humanized to the point where we have forgotten or neglected that these are just forces of nature. These are, it's all psychology. It's all mentalism. It's all about understanding how to navigate the self, and that these forces of nature, we have anthropomorphized them to, you know, because it's an advanced form, but it became corrupt and we have literalized these things and forgot what they really represent in the self. So it's a really, really incredible story, an unfoldment. It's a very amazing science of the self if we're willing to be honest and, you know, do the real work. And, you know, that's what being aligned to Ma'at is all about. And that being said, a really great movie, I actually just watched it the other day, is very synchronistic too, because I was doing this show or working on the show. And I saw the movie, The Prestige, and this is a movie that I didn't really understand when I saw it when it first came out a long time ago. I definitely had no idea about any of this stuff. But rewatching it, if you're trying to understand the hoodwink and cable toe, watch that movie, because they mention the pledge, which is the commitment. And they talk about the turn, which is the going through the second degree, and you know, understanding the spiral staircase. And also they talk about coming back, because, you know, it's a magic trick. But obviously, that's not really giving anything away. The movie is really, really amazing. But if you want to know what's really being said in that movie, allegorically, definitely take this knowledge with you of the ritual of the hoodwink and cable toe, and you'll really see what this movie is trying to convey. And just an amazing movie. Christopher Nolan does, fantastic movies and allegories. And definitely check that out. But that being said, I think I'm at the end. I can't really put too much more down. But definitely just understand that this information is leading us to Isis and Thoth. And these are forces of nature that help us understand ourselves in reality. And this cable toe really ties us back to these ancient archetypal forces of nature to really help us bridge the gap between the modern world and the ancient world. So definitely get ready for Isis and Thoth. It's going to be a tremendous unraveling. I'm actually going to unravel both of these archetypes together. But we're going to start with Isis first and then work our way into Thoth and talk about how both of these forces work together in the occult rebirth. And so it's a very big deal. It's going to be a really big undertaking, just as this whole Cubbyhole podcast really has been. And if you'd like to know anything more about these shows, you can go to cubbyhole.com. Go check out the rest of the podcast. Go check out the presentations by Douglas and Brandon Martin and myself. And also, you'll see any news updates on there. So always be checking in. And that being said, I really hope that everyone has appreciated what has been laid out here so far. And I just ask that if you do find any value in these shows, to please share them, get the information out there to anybody who you might think might take any interest into this type of material. I really, put everything into it. I put all my time, all my energy into developing this information. And so I'm always very grateful for anyone who actually takes the time to go through it and learn it and understand it and then share it with others, because it's a free library of information that is very critical to helping us understand the world that we live in a lot better. So that being said, thank you for listening, and just keep in mind to do no harm, defend truth, and keep transcending dogma.